My name's Ed Piskor.
I'm Jim Rugg.
We're going to be looking at about 100 pages of Frank Miller Marvel Comics art. Before that, though, little business.
Octobriana, 1976, world's first blacklight comic, is going out to stores wide in the coming weeks. This is your chance to pick it up if you missed the Kickstarter. It will be available everywhere, and we are almost sold out of this print run now, Ed. So if you're watching this at home, if you haven't picked this up yet, grab one when you see it, because these things may be gone soon.
And shout to the Kickstarters who were able to get some of these extra lucky bougie versions.
By the way, we are sending out over 100 of those to stores as incentives. So if your store is a great comic book store, they may have one or two of those variants, the black and white, the retro edition, available. So if you really want on board with those, one more chance to get those as well.
Awesome, and congratulations, Jimmy. Right now, I finished the fourth issue of the Red Room comic strip, and thinking about putting them out on a monthly basis. I have 128 pages completed. This past week was a three-page week with lots of good flotsam and jetsam, gore, and exit wounds, man.
That's amazing.
$3 gets you the archive, patreon.com/edpiskor. These links are in the description below. But with the thoughts of putting out a monthly comic in mind, there's an extra skill set in that you and I are just simply not privy to, because we take all the time in the world we want on our comics, for better or worse. Let's take a look at a good example of somebody who was working within that system, but still created an identity for their own work in comics under such grueling schedules, man.
Yeah, probably almost 3 years of a run here. I think 33 issues maybe were produced in this schedule. Some good collaborators along the way. And, you know, these are some of my formative comics. This is stuff I got hold of early on, was a big Frank Miller fan. It's incredible that we live in a world where this artifact edition exists and you can look at, you know, pretty good reproductions of Miller originals from that time period. But great collaborator with Klaus Janson as this run progresses. And the other thing that I think of within the monthly parameters is also working within a house style.
Right.
That Marvel house style, we all know Jim Shooter had some rules that he expected his cartoonists to follow. So there's a lot to think about as we go through these pages.
Look at this technique right here, man, pulling out the little wrought iron fence with using whiteout.
And screen tone applied in the background, like they are going for it. You see it often on the glasses, is where you often see that screen tone applied, but all kinds of tricks on display here.
How about this incredible texture, Jimmy? That's not, you don't use your good Raphael brush to get this kind of texture.
Yeah, really, really great seeing that. We've talked about texture quite a bit, especially when we look at these artist editions going back to like EC guys. You know, you're going to see it on display here, and especially when we get into the Klaus Janson work, you're really going to see this.
Texture's what I think of when I think of Klaus Janson. You know, a lot of hairy shading. Oh man, this is when Uncle Frank was just drawing Roger McKenzie scripts. I actually like these a lot too.
Yeah, I wonder how he's got to be, what, 19 or something at
this
point?
He's a kid. He's a kid, man. He's young enough to remember what his prom outfit looks like. Look at that thing right there. Looking like Austin Powers. You know, the one thing that is unfortunate is that I think one of these issues, it's the one where the boxer is holding, or Daredevil's holding the boxer or vice versa inside the boxing ring. That's inked by Wally Wood.
Oh, wow.
Wally Wood inking Frank Miller. All right, man. We're launching into some Klaus Janson shit right here.
Yeah, you know, a couple of things, too. I think a lot about how a lot of this housework, I think, you're grading on a curve for the reasons we say. It's monthly, you know, you can't really change the characters. There's a lot of limitations. The one thing that is the highest level of craft in this stuff is the lettering. And who's lettering this? Is it Joe Rosen? Joe Rosen, okay. I think Novak was on the previous one. But these letters, you know, it's a very small list of letters that Marvel used. And consistently, like, this stuff is maybe the highest craft part of these comics.
There's storytelling things in here that you ain't going to find in your average monthly. Look at this, man. Klaus is using, like, one of those, like, Uniball flare pens that you could get at the Shop and Save.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And it just did not hold up over these years. But actually, looking at it like this, it creates a really cool sense of depth in the original. Like, it's receding in the background.
For sure. I mean, this is what you want in an artist edition. There's a great Alex Toth article about using pens and markers, and he talks about it, how, like, over a couple of years, it could disappear, it could change colors, it can bleed everywhere. Like, man, those early markers and pens, you were getting a weird bunch of ink out of that stuff.
Look at that weird little Shakespearean statue right there. That has shades of, like, Ronin.
Yes.
So this is that first appearance of Electra Comic, which is an early Frank Miller writing session. We got a paste-up right here. New panel. You think about that monthly grind, right? And you still have time. This is a paste-up panel as well. This is a new panel. And you still have time to make adjustments. Are they creative adjustments, or is Uncle Jim Shooter saying, Frank, you pushed a little too far?
Yeah, it's hard to tell. This is a pretty amazing panel. You know, almost a mini splash montage. That's a technique you don't see a lot of panels that look like that. You know, that much stuff going on. I think that's something that's kind of fallen out of favor over time.
Looking at this, I was like, what the fuck am I looking at there? Is that like a squashed bug or something? But then I realized what it was. And then it made me think, Frank started to figure out making clearer silhouettes over the years.
You see that with a lot of artists, even like a Mike Mignola. There's also blue pencil on some of this, and I'm trying to remember if that indicates something. You know, sometimes that would be engraver shorthand to put a screen on it, but I don't know if something, what that's for.
Yeah, I would bet that it's some kind of color hold thing. I love this flare pin. Klaus taking some shorts.
Yeah, it makes for a really nice some page variation. Getting your money's worth as an artist edition.
And just look at the sheer, like, disrespect, man, at the printers. Like, you send your original art off, and then you come back with these, like, little pieces cut out.
This is pretty early in original art returns. Is this late 70s, early 80s? Like, you know, that was something that it had not been happening that long. So there was a lot worse disrespect before this. Man, love that as a silhouette, distant shot using the black space. Using the negative space in a panel like that is amazing, and especially a panel that's in the middle of the page. You know, your eye just locks right onto that.
A lot of storytelling going on in this page, and it feels reminiscent of, like, something that maybe, like, a Jim Steranko would have brought to a Marvel comic at this point. Before that, it was all about bombast. It was the Kirby sort of storytelling, characters jumping towards the camera, and Steranko really started to kind of, like, slow the mood a little bit, slow the pace, play around with camera angles, do a little Citizen Kane work. To add variation to this visual storytelling part.
I see some Kriegstein too. You know, I think that he had cast quite a shadow of people, you know, like you say, Steranko and so on, really kind of approaching panel composition differently. I love this page with directional devices. You know, we start in this top and we're moving this direction. We come back with the rain and Electra movement and then back again, you know, so you're going left and right. There's a lot of motion. It's very dynamic for a page.
This is the hairy old mm-hmm. school Klaus Janson textures that I was talking about.
Yeah, I think of it as scratchy.
Yeah.
I always think it's often pen work, I think, is part of why I think of it as scratchy. That's a little heavy. I don't know whether that's pen or not, but some of his work definitely gets into those pen lines where it just looks like he's laying down the cross-hatching on top of itself.
Miller tells operatic stories, man, but you still got to be choosy when you put those tears on a dude.
Very dramatic blacks and whites. This was something that I responded to. Probably one of the first things I responded to with Miller was the way he would spot blacks and do really dramatic shadows. And of course, you know, follow him into Sin City and it becomes like to the nth degree. But always present in his work.
Look at this. It could be some of the first nunchucks in comics. Nunchucks and size.
Yes. Imagine the young Kevin Eastman taking copious notes of these pages.
And then you have these guys, like, ripped straight out of, like, a Sin City kind of thing, man. It's, like, weird crime boss dudes.
For sure.
How do you convey brightness?
And talk about quick drawing. Like, this is the sleight of hand kind of stuff where you take a close look at the originals and not good-looking drawings at all. You look at it on the colored comic page, perfect.
Yeah, these guys absolutely knew how to draw for reproduction and knew all of the kinds of pros and cons to the offset printing process, like, from that time. You know, like, lines are going to show up much thicker, so you can have hatching that has lines that are further apart, and they're going to tighten up in the final printed version.
Yeah, that always would blow my mind when I first started seeing original pages, is how different they looked. And exactly what you said, Ed, like the reproduction is just the reduction in the reproduction. It just completely changes it.
This is an Eisner stroke right here. You know, take a look at Contract with God and you'll see that kind of depth of field. And this is a sans serif story. You know, this is a Frank Miller's version of the spirit / sans serif. You know, what's the French? Cherchez la femme kind of tale.
I can't believe how yellow some of these are. You know, some are that orangey brown color that pretty normal for old paper, but man, like,
that's got to be nicotine, man.
Yeah, or on display somewhere, like getting crushed with something. Some kind of elemental exposure.
The fight choreography is something that Miller was totally known for.
Yeah, seemed to be innovative. You think of Kirby as being the dynamic storyteller up to this point, but his fights weren't choreographed this way. It was just big swings and impact. Again, another thing I really responded to as a reader were these fight sequences. They felt like the movies I was watching.
These are those Kriegstein strokes of just like the second by second shot composition. And then look at Kingpin's lair right here, man. You'd think he could spring from maybe like a corner window in some skyscraper.
Yeah, where is that? It looks like he's going to move out and the turtles are going to move in.
I always love like seeing little white tape. Like, I'm not going to use just a little dab of white out to get those little pen marks out of there. I'm going to put a piece of tape down.
Yeah, it is weird. That's such a tool I don't use, tape. But it does appear in several of these artist editions that I've seen.
A little paste-up lettering there for the Fs.
That's pretty neat. I wonder what that reflects, like why that wouldn't just be on the paper. It seems like it would be a pain to actually cut that out.
You know what, Jimmy? All this lettering is pasted up. Yeah, down to the sound effect.
Weird.
These are the things that you can like make note of and pay attention to whenever you take a look at these originals. Look at all this zip.
Do you think that the pasted up letters reflect like a deadline crunch where it's like, it's we got to get this to the inker. We're going to need it tomorrow. Get the letterer on board.
Could be. There was one issue. I do think it comes later. I think it's probably like around the Angel Dust Child's Play issues where you could find a video of Klaus and Frank Miller talking at School of Visual Arts. They had to turn an issue around. It got flat out rejected by the comics code. They had to turn an issue around in like 2 weeks. But, you know, similar deal here potentially.
This is great. There's a note here. Klaus, I see zip on wall blinds and Elektra except highlights. So Frank Miller, like including notes on the board going out off to the finisher. And it's cool. He's even he's not just inker. It's finished art that he's being credited with, which he does a lot of in this run. And probably part of the way Miller is able to maintain such a high level of quality on a monthly schedule is having a guy like Jansen doing finished art. There's the one issue that has like the Black Widow splash page reproduced in the letter column where you see the layouts and they are very rough. But that's what you get whenever Klaus Jansen's the guy you're handing it to.
Klaus is going to have some tax write-offs on this one, man, because this is about a whole page of Zip-A-Tome that he had to use. And you could see, like, where he had to use, seam. Like, little chunks of other pieces. Because a sheet of Zip is about this big. Mm-hmm. So now you have to be creative in how you play. You have to play Tetris, kind of. You know, use a little piece there, but then you got to... It's not as easy as just putting it on there and cutting off what you need. Doubling up the zips here to create this moiré pattern. And usually you don't want that, but you can find frosted glass that kind of looks like that. So that's pretty freaking smart.
Yeah, it's a bold move.
Oh, in fact, Glynis, this is frosted glass. Totally looks like it.
I love these margin notes to their collaborators.
Good lighting on that face right there. And here we continue the operatic romance between Elektra and Daredevil. If she doesn't fuck me, she's going to kill me.
Great panel, too, where the action is so off-center in the panel. Very interesting compositional choice.
Long way down.
Yeah.
This was, like, indicative of a certain era of Frank Miller. Like, the hatching kind of stuff with, like, white cut into it. And also, this is the shit that, like, Jim Lee fixated on young. But then he and Scott Williams, like, tightened that up to, like, a rigid plastic degree. Ninjas, baby.
I love them. Who drew better ninjas than Frank Miller and Klaus Janson? Loved them.
Shades of Dark Knight Returns.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, I don't even remember this so distinctly, but wow. I guess cabs are a big part of your life if you live in New York at this time.
Yes, sir. Yeah, no Ubers, right? Look at this pretty cool looking approach with this Zipitone here. I'm trying to look for the seam of the zip because these dots are crazy, and then you see these dots kind of like going on to other parts of the drawing. I just don't understand.
Yeah, there's some wild stuff happening there. It looks like it's the same zip, you know, the lines are continuous. So, but it doesn't look like he must be rubbing them off, scratching them off.
Yeah.
The scratches don't show up very much, but definitely a technique. I mean, that's, you know, one of the things with screen tone is, of course, that you can work over top of it, whether that's with white or with black ink or scraping it with a, you know, some kind of sharp edge.
The ominous noir shadow coming toward our protagonist. Look at this, some Eisnerian strokes of storytelling stuff. Like, when you see this kind of thing, you just know Frank is, like, very proud of himself that day.
These kinds of, you know, like horizontal-shaped panels and the way he fills those compositions is pretty inventive, too. I think, I don't know, it might be personally, I don't use a lot of those kinds of shaped panels, but it feels like that has come out of fashion a bit.
This is definitely from a time. Like, yeah. You look at 70s Marvel comics and you'll see this. You'll see the long, narrow ones as well. Look at these, man.
Love it. This is like talking to 10-year-old me. Yeah. Like, there's nothing you could show me better than that.
Look at that, a little fingerprint technique, man, to scuff up the pawn shop cabinet here.
Such a small detail.
This is a dicey enterprise when you have to place Zipitone on top of whiteout. It used to be real hairy. Like, I'd be curious to see how this turned out because the cameras will pick up like every fleck of garbage underneath there, but he's using whiteout underneath and whiteout as highlight.
Another example of great texturing on the drapery there.
Yeah, I could almost smell the patchouli.
Open panels, creating like a rhythm, you know, closed, open, closed, open.
Little mood lighting with the zip right there.
Miller's great for timing.
Yes.
You know, like, there are these cartoonists that their best skill is the cartooning part. It's like you almost have to read it to unlock what's so masterful about it.
Right.
And Miller's one of those guys.
Yeah, for sure. You could look at this image with, you know, a lecture with no ears and just be like, I don't get it. But it's the gestalt, as they say in art class.
Very Ditko-esque. That particular figure.
Yeah.
Some of his figures are awkward. You know, it's part of the cartooning. It's hard to explain why it works, but a lot of artists have that. Glacy, Steranko, where a figure's just a little bit off, Kirby. And I think it creates a dynamic quality, you know, because they feel off because maybe that arm works like if you're facing it, but then the other one's in profile. And it creates like a movement almost within a figure. It's almost like a cubism or something where like you're seeing different parts of a figure in time, even though it's in one panel.
Look at the speed of these inks. It's something right. That I'm marveling at, man. Like Klaus's grittiness really adds to the tone of, you know, this 42nd Street Hell's Kitchen environment that
you're 100% right about the speed too. If you look at like folds and things, these are just dashed off the marks. Like there's no attempt at specificity except for, you know, directions and weight. Like it all adds up, it all reads really well. But this is again the stuff I would see when I started looking at originals, and it's just like these are just these heavy brush marks. Like how it reads perfectly as folded fabric, but how do you do that?
Yeah, and he's hitting it with speed because there's white out in the margins when he's, you know, flying past the panel borders.
Man, widescreen. This is in 2000s, whenever widescreen became the popular storytelling mode. Man, Miller was there 20 years earlier.
It's so perfect thinking about his you know, Vermont ass chilling in New York at this time, because you think of, like, all the glory of 42nd Street and the ninja movies that we're playing and the urban environment, like just all the hardcore stuff going on. And it's reflected pretty well in here. And as a kid who ain't from around there, it does have the sort of observation of the outsider.
He does some really great faces. I've been admiring them for a few pages where, like, you'll get a close-up. You pointed out a couple, Ed, with the lighting and stuff. But it's really nice, the features that he highlights, that he includes. You know, it's so reductive in ways, right? Like, there's no bridge of the nose line there, but the face looks great, and there is a lot of detail. Eyelids and you know, shadows around the mouth. Really interesting what he's choosing to include and not. Amazing. It's just amazing whenever he decides to go in on one of these faces.
And these kind of lines you wouldn't see in a typical American comic, but you could see that in manga.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wonder when he gets hold of manga. It feels like he must have it already, right? Like,
Larry Hama tells the story about bringing, finding Lone Wolf and Cub at a Japanese bookstore in New York, bringing it back to Continuity Studios, and all of those Tankobon volumes fucking disappeared within, like, days.
Love the shadow on the eyeballs.
Yeah, yeah. Super, super, super dicey choice, man. That could easily not work out. Good lighting on that face.
The glasses are always remarkable.
Yeah.
And another one of those pieces when you look at it and it's just a giant thick ink line. Like, there's no attempt at definition or anything, but it reads perfect.
I like this face right here, yeah, with Kingpin.
That's moving towards Sin City.
Yeah.
Oh, man, how iconic is that?
Yeah. Wow. Do we remember that ninja dude's name that keeps coming back? Kirigi.
Yeah, I wouldn't have pulled that out. Walking with that sword in his gut.
Wow.
Yeah, I think it's a safe bet that he has found his manga at some point before this. Again, I can't emphasize how incredible it is to put a good fight scene into these kinds of shapes. Really getting his money's worth.
And this is the shooter era. I have to imagine that, to at least a small extent, Miller had to sell Jim Shooter on this.
I wonder how much. You know, at this point, he's, what, 12 issues in? 176? Almost 20 issues in. And, I mean, Daredevil took off pretty quick once, yeah, Miller takes over. So, you know, he probably had some clout. You know, I mean, Shooter's overlooking a lot of books, so you'd think he's not looking too close at Miller in terms of, like, editorializing him or changing anything. But I could be wrong.
Look at this cloud technique with the fingerprints.
Clouds. I admire good clouds. We pointed them out in past videos. It's weird, the stuff that's hard to do well. Clouds aren't that easy.
Anything
especially
that doesn't
black
have,
and white.
Anything that doesn't have a hard edge is hard to do. Good water.
That's a figure, though. There's almost no drawing on that figure. So minimal.
Yeah, it would be images like this that kind of, like, unlocked a little bit of a code to me for how to draw the figure. Because when you're a little kid, your observational skills ain't all there. And if a person's standing, you just imagine that they're a straight line.
Right.
You know, not this, like, S-curve of the spine and the legs going back. The tip of the leg kind of hits the bottom of the chin to create the proper weight and balance and everything. That sort of comes later unless you're an outlier. Oh, shit, dude, we're getting into some duotone. This is a real fun era because this is definitely Klaus doing a lot of the labor when it comes to the final, you know, how the final image is going to look. You know, this is around the Black Widow issue. Klaus is coloring this one also, which probably can speak to the line weights and how the lighting is being handled. But how about the dream sequence with this duotone board right here?
Wow.
Held up great. You know, the duotone held up great. And just looking at this makes me wonder if, like, this was like an Eastman Laird thing where they see these lines and are like, how do we do that?
Yeah, imagine the mystery of that whenever you're an amateur.
I felt
that
mystery.
Just trying to figure it out. Yeah, exactly. I mean, now, you know, you can kind of Google whatever and figure this stuff out. But back then, man, it'd be hard to put that together.
Were you one of the dudes that would put your ruler down and do little polka dots to try to get your zips?
I have done that. Yeah, I have done that.
You know what else I did? I would look through mom's newspaper and any section that would have like a solid like gray dot section, I would save those and then use a glue stick.
Wow.
And that's glue those down and then draw over top of it, thinking that that's how the shit was done. Yes, we got a couple pages of the dream sequence.
You know, the line work on the dream sequence even feels different.
Yeah.
It's very, you know, Mazzucchelli moves into that, like, what he calls dumb line Batman Year One era. It has a quality like that. It's very awkward or unexpected. It's just different, you know? It's not that smooth, sexy kind of line that you see a lot of times. Very raw. It's pretty great. You know, if you're making comics and you're trying to stand out, like, it's a bold choice, but you are trying to make it look different. You are trying to make it look like no other book, and they're doing it with every piece they can. It feels like no part of this comic is unconsidered.
Klaus is bourgeois too, man, because when you see most people fucking around with duotone board, and this shit was always expensive, they would cut out this panel, they would cut out this panel,
right.
They would cut out this panel. They wouldn't be drawing on the entire thing and not using it. Like, you look at this now, and it feels like a crime against the arts. Like, it's like, yo, man, we don't have this anymore.
Look at these panel compositions. Like, that's super bold. This is super bold with no borders on it. Yeah, man. That's two people that are pretty confident in where they're at this point. They've got some miles under their feet at this point.
Look at that, man. That's like a... Yeah, I can imagine this on the back of a paperback cover with, like, the synopsis underneath or something, man.
Yeah, terrific lighting.
And there it is, the super important one of Frank Miller's young innovations, the little clothing tent from the stab wounds. Ben Urich, we saw him in the Born Again videos.
It's so noir, like this is the most noir. Wow. Miller has to be in all his glory. It feels like everything was built toward this point, you know, being a crime comics fan that we know he was. How excited I bet he was when he got to do this sequence.
I feel like I've seen a Klaus version
of this.
Yeah,
I was going to say, totally.
A Mazzucchelli version of this. You know, like when Ben Urich gets the phone call and turns into his Ted McKeever version of it. Like,
yeah, for sure.
This is something. This is another one of those like weird moments in Daredevil where there's, you know, this is probably Kingpin's wife. I don't think it was ever fully spelled out, but we're led to believe. And there's just, it's not Morlocks. It's like there are more subterranean dwellers down there. And they even have, you know, their own kind of outfits.
Yeah, and you see some good textures coming out of that stuff too. Some of the fingerprint looking kind of smudges and smears.
Hitting stuff with white to bring out extra strands of hair and whatnot.
And we would see some of these kinds of techniques in Ronin.
Yes. Yeah, for sure. Then once again, that looks like a character.
That's your scratchy, when we were talking about scratchy with Klaus, that's what I think of.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
We're getting
there.
What
a page.
We're getting there, man. Another page of duotone using white. Like, I would like to see how that turns out. On the
because that is almost painting.
Yeah, because you can't tell if he wants that not to be seen or if he just wants that to be fussed with a little bit.
All those bars too. It's very precise drawing. You know, a panel like this.
Good lighting on this guy.
This stuff is like, it doesn't make sense. He's doing vaulting and stuff.
In the prison. It's like, you're the most dangerous guy. And we really probably shouldn't let you even touch anything that has a nut or a bolt.
I don't know how easy it is to see this, but as a silhouette, like, that is just a jumbo line for that guy, man. Talk about marks that mean a lot more in context than they do on the page there. There it is.
There was around this time, maybe obviously sometime before, Tom Snyder had an interview with Charles Manson, and that was the inspiration for this little sequence.
And you can find pages that basically copy this composition in the like the Image era, the late 80s, early 90s, of guys like Liefeld and Lee that are making each page. What did they call them? Anchors?
Anchors,
I forget.
Yeah.
you know, but something to make each page have that pinup quality, and that composition is used again and again. Get that big, cool, full figure in.
It's kind of Frank Miller point camera angle with the chest like that, you know, arms back like that. You see that in, you know, like his late period DC covers and stuff. Frantic set of pages. Lots happening here.
Yeah. Hostage. Great lettering. Love that blam sound effect coming out of the gun. It's such shorthand cartooning, and, you know, I mean, it's really the foundation of what comics are.
And look at this, like, shanty town, Depression era, like, little wharf thing.
Cool textures both on that shanty, but also in the water below them.
Yeah, on the pillars, the pylons, whatever the fuck those things are called.
Yeah, that panel's actually loaded with just about all of the textures that you're going to get.
Yeah, great bricks.
Mm-hmm. A little bit of the scratchy stuff in the background.
Wow, another great face. We cracked the code on some of Miller's references when we visited Kagan MacLeod in Toronto, because they have those, I forget what those old reference books are called, that just have, you know, a bunch of different people creating different facial expressions and stuff. And I was able to pull out handfuls of them and just know where they came from in Electra Lives Again. I bet face, when you see really good faces like this, I bet you could find the corresponding one in those books. I forget what they're called, like the Forsyth method or something like that.
I was thinking that, or even like a film still from something. Because that is pretty complex lighting.
Yeah.
Great car. Cars are hard to do.
For sure, man. And these big boxy ones, like, he's so good at them. Those are almost manga eyes.
Pretty big.
Oh, look at this, man. It abuses the 180 degree rule, but that's okay. Circle panels, you don't see them far out outside of the golden age of comics.
Yeah, it might be the first one we've really seen in this collection.
Nice big face. I love the inking on the lips here.
Yeah, it's a very full face. We see so many faces that are beat up or very troubled. This one is kind of, I don't know, very alive.
And you could tell, man, they made efforts to put the right lines down there to just try to make sure that, you know, she doesn't look too haggard, craggy.
Yeah, not yet. It's coming.
I always love this shit, man, where the characters' costumes disappear into the black of the background. Moving at a quicker pace, like, if this was your average Marvel comic, there would be a lot of lettering and conversation happening here. You think Uncle Stan Lee would let this page go by without a pithy good conversation?
Point. Yeah. Or captions that just have a lot of adverbs.
Yes. Wow. Love this shit.
It reads so clearly. You know, it is great that it's not filled up with words everywhere, because it does read so clearly. Pretty brutal.
That's a devastating blow right there. Our girl's getting janked up. Always a good touch when, you know, you're putting use to accessories and shit.
Using props, man. Stone Cold would approve.
Did Cable ever dig into one of his fanny packs?
That's so true. Somebody should have done a parody with him where it was like the utility belt.
Jim, they were churning this stuff out on a monthly basis. And this is a double-sized issue.
Yeah, man. This is still one of those things. Like, I read it way after publication.
Yeah.
But it still was one of those things of just, like, rereading this over and over and over. Incredible, man. Still, and it still feels that way looking at it now. This is one of those issues, you know, and I've said it before, I can't imagine what it would be like that when this came out. You know, if you're a reader, a longtime reader, and this issue's published,
and there's no diamond previews, you know, there are no smart marks. You're not going to get a 3-month lead time to know what you're in store for. You're just going to get this, and you're going to be shocked that you know, a character hasn't died in comics since you know, Gwen Stacy or whatever.
Yeah, and Elektra was such a hit character. Yeah, incredible. What a bold move for a young cartoonist to be like, well, we made the successful character, now we're going to kill her.
Look at all the amazing textures with the foliage and stuff here.
It's hard to watch, man.
Yeah. Yeah, and just Bullseye. He's the only one who's not having a hard time with it. Look at that, dude. That's totally Marv. That's totally Marv running into the fucking big metal door.
It is.
When he's there with his...
Exactly. It is exactly that pose. Wow.
Probably the same, chunk. Still a Marvel comic, everybody. Lest we forget.
The vaulting has paid off, though. We do get to see that come into play.
Jim, you don't show a gun in Act 1 if you don't use it in Act 3. Miller keeps these things, like, in, like, even Elektra Lives Again and shit. Like, I'm sure, you know, I'm as cultured as a fucking poor-ass Pittsburgh boy is, man. But I'm sure this has some kind of, you know, Japanese historic something or other.
If you say so.
Look at this, like... Does that turn into Megatron? Is that what that gun is?
It is. That's probably a shooter touch. Hey, we got this Transformers license.
Ah, dude.
Man, I forgot. Yeah, it is fun going through this. I haven't looked at this book in a while, and you get so invested in those emotional parts. That Elektra story is such a highlight, and then here we go.
Yeah.
Another great run.
Getting into the sort of line work of like a Dark Knight Returns almost with super thin lines.
Yeah, that's a beautiful two-page spread. Like, wow. Again, these guys are at the top of their game. They're young, they're energetic, and they are going for it here. You know, these are the issues that are collected with the Jeff Darrow cover.
Yeah.
Partially collected. I think they take out subplots and stuff.
They do,
so
yeah.
You're mainly getting the Punisher storyline. But I remember picking up these original issues recently because I had the reprints. And it's like, these were printed in huge numbers. At this point, Daredevil's selling as well as it's ever sold. So you can find those at a reasonable price, which, you know, I always think, get those original issues if you can find them, if you can afford them. And even with the Punisher as a guest star, there are a lot of these issues out there.
Look at this one, man. Eisenstein would be proud. A mile of red tape.
Great spacing, too, on this page. Playing with negative space. Look at how that blue line is so pronounced and yet doesn't show up in the printing.
Yeah, there's these different kinds of blue lines too. Like, there are these ones that are like dashed out, like that look like duotone. It's like they were still figuring that stuff out. Oh shit, look at that. DC Comics Incorporated.
Wow.
Wow, that's funny. That's cutting promos into fashion.
It is. Get better paper, Marvel. It's probably more like a Deadline, and that's what's sitting next to the desk.
Yeah. Look at that crazy texture.
That's a pretty bold move.
And it's like, what is that? But it feels like fall, you know? It feels like sticks and trees, like with no leaves.
And at this point, Jansen is credited, I think, penciler, inker, finisher, colorist, maybe? Like
said finished art for sure, and yeah, I think he colored this stuff as well.
So, I mean, he is really going graphically, like, you know, Miller on the layouts, Jansen on this finished illustration, if you will.
Yeah. Look at this, man. That's so good.
Yeah, I think that's what you see, you know? I think you see the confidence of an illustrator just trying to make this stuff sing, and mission accomplished.
Wow, that's a good kingpin. That's a good kingpin. It's like a little marble with legs.
Yeah, it's really up a level.
I forget if there are pages from issue 191 in here, but I hope so, because like that's a very weird, you know, Joe Rubenstein on inks there, and we've seen so much Jansen, we're gonna see the Rubenstein approach if those are in here. Oh, this is good, man. When his hearing is coming back, and it's like raw nerves.
Yeah, it's too loud. Look at that. Look at how big that is. What a cool graphic concept. I don't know if you can do this if you're not the writer artist.
Right.
It's such a visual concept. It could be hard to even explain in a script. Stilt man.
You're trying to sell that is like nobody's calling the cops, you know.
And also, like, Is he like 8 stories tall? Like, what are we looking at there? He's above all those building tops.
Yeah, he's
20 stories.
He's like, high enough that if he falls, no worries, because he'll just land on a roof somewhere. Wow.
Yeah, I love these 2-page splashes.
Wow.
Yeah, see, Jansen, penciler, inker, colorist.
Frank Miller, writer, storyteller. So he's blocking things out.
It's really bold, some of the mark making. You know, the silhouette is so loosey-goosey in a lot of ways, but so are a lot of these shading marks. You know, it's I don't know if loose is the right word. I think Jansen's totally in control, but it's a different style of inking than what we saw early.
Yeah, it's turning, you know, the concrete jungle into an organic life form by not, you know, taping down the paper and ruling out each line and everything. There was an indication for a sound effect here, but they determined that they didn't need it. This reads.
So much screen tone too. Wow, look at this face.
I wonder if this is the guy from that Jim Lee X-Men with Captain America. You remember there was that mustache dude?
Yeah, it could be.
That was a cool thing also about Black Widow's costume at this time period, where it was like it wasn't colored. It was just
right.
Zip-a-tone.
That's great. That mouth and the shadows. Super well done. And a little bit of a white highlight on the lip.
And look at this. You would assume that the background would have been colored to make her stand out, right?
Yeah, that's neat. Loving all this stuff, man.
Klaus's stick gets really gross at a certain point with all the little dots and and fistulas and shit hanging off his face.
Fistulas.
Whatever that, I don't even know what that
is. That's good, that's right.
Look at that, man, little Wolverine claws.
These things would always be, and I still think about them, trying to do these panels that are, they're almost abstract, but they read, they advance your story really well, but it's so hard to conceptualize that kind of thing. You know, like, that's a weird drawing.
It is, yeah. Like I mean, it's an inaccurate drawing of the, you draw that better, but you know what it is. And shit, he had to color this after, so get it in where you can fit it in.
That is gorgeous. The screen tone in the rain, and even on the water on the street. Wow.
It feels like James O'Barr would have pulled something from this.
I often talk about how, like, the black and white stuff, all of this is gone now. This is all done by the colorist,
right?
Almost all of this. But as a black and white illustration, you know, with the white window in the middle of all of that gray, about as good as you're going to make a black and white illustration right there.
Bobby Kennedy as a Black Widow.
You know, speaking of kind of weird drawings, like, there's some stuff going on here. Look how big his hands are, and then, like, his head, it's not right. It looks all right. It kind of is a cool drawing, but it's way off in terms of being an accurate figure.
Yeah, like, these guys clearly know how to
bend
do
stuff.
All that stuff, but then when they get to that finish stage, they can just... It's more expressive or something.
I tell you, you get movement that way.
Yeah.
It really is the idea of, like, a head turning.
And it's hokusai, you know? Like, it's about the storytelling rather than having you just sit there looking at this shit.
This is one of those images when I was a kid I would just copy and try to figure out, like, how does this work? It's the height of magic. Also the secret of, like, put more black ink on the page.
Right.
Always a good idea.
Another duotone piece.
Really fun. Great use of duotone in that top stretch where there's the two shades are being used to create that wind-like feeling. And then doing it across a face. That's a bold choice.
There's no control Z, man, if you accidentally go over that eyeball.
Such a somber. Trying to bring her back.
Right. Oh, dude, we got some.
Terry Austin on it.
Oh, that was Terry Austin, not
Lynn
Joe
Varley
Rubenstein.
Coloring. I didn't realize that she colored this issue. So, possibly their first team up, Miller and Varley?
Maybe.
We need to look at this issue probably,
definitely.
Especially considering this creative team. Like, it'll be worth seeing the printed finished piece with Varley's color and at size and everything. This was one of my favorite issues as a kid, and it's probably because of Terry Austin's inking. I love the lines. More lines, the better, you know, because I would have gotten this in the Image era, in the, you know, the Jim Lee X-Men era.
Look at that.
That's what I wanted.
And that's what Jim Lee wanted. Like, you look at this, and you could see that, like, this is where Jim Lee and those guys were pulling from.
Perfect sense. You know, if you're Jim Lee and you're X-Men fan or whatever, of course Terry Austin's going to be a soft spot in your heart for Terry Austin, and then put that on top of Frank Miller. Yeah, this is a Bible for a lot of people.
Good, I'm glad we got a couple pages of that issue at the very least.
I wonder what impact this had on Miller, too. Because it's a totally different look for his finished art. And, I mean, I guess Ronin comes next, and it is a more rendered, cross-hatched, line-intensive style. So I wonder if that's something that came out of this, if he wanted to work with Austin, if it's just a random luck of the draw of the deadline game.
Ready for a big-ass duotone piece?
Yeah, that's fun.
How about that cityscape?
That's what I'm looking at. That is,
Otomo would do these things, too, where it's this very expressive, you know, bunch of lines and negative space, but it fully reads as a congested, you know, urban environment. He's dripping fucking duotone liquid on this thing.
Great shadows, too, that underlit daredevil. It feels like these guys were experimenting on whatever they were doing.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm sure they didn't have a lot of time to hit the sketchbook, so it was like, let's try this. Let's try what we can do with this duo shade stuff.
Look at that. Don't call that number.
Wow. Cool to see their lettering, too. You know, I'm sure that that's a combination of those guys doing, you know,
yeah, getting,
part of the finished art.
Getting very Eisnerian there. All right, man. Now this is the artifact part of the thing. And by the way, like, I wouldn't mind going through several of these issues, like the Frank Miller, Denny O'Neill annuals that they did. This is a good one. The conceit, I believe, if this is the one that I think, yeah, the conceit is that, you know, spoilers for a 30-year-old comic, but the ink in the newspaper is what's poisoning, you know, the city.
Yeah. And I gotta imagine quite a nod to Eisner, this kind of storytelling.
This is a Ditko homage from, I believe it's Spider-Man Annual 1 versus the Sinister Six, when Spider-Man would be fighting each of the villains, and then there would be a splash page where he's fucking each of them up in their own way. And that's... Lest we forget, man, Ditko was an influence on Miller.
Yeah, for sure. What is going on there? Is that just a dark duo shade?
Yeah, it could be a bad scan. It could be... There were many different types of duotone. Like we saw like a 233 earlier, this is 214. Sometimes when you do that experimenting, you gotta see if shit will work or not. It's not too pleasing looking.
Trying some ink splatter.
Yeah, to the point of, like, you know, you're masking off stuff with Friskit so that it doesn't overspray.
This was black and... I think this was printed in black and white. It's probably why he's applying all these different grays to that. It was in one of those magazines, the... Can't think of the name of it, but one of those Marvel magazines.
Right. Here's the Joe Rubenstein stuff from Wolverine. Look at that, man. That's Kurosawa, baby.
I never connected with this. This is probably my least connection with the Frank Miller work.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things where it's not... You know, it's an extra piece to
yeah, his pantheon. Yeah, I can't tell you what... There's nothing obviously wrong with it. Yeah, I don't know if that's the reason or not, but it just never quite registered with me like some of his other work.
I never saw this piece.
Yeah, I don't remember this.
Those early covers and Seaman. He could draw like a Coney Island coaster. We were talking about that in the Dark Knight Returns thing because there was that one coaster that was just like a track.
Yeah. He probably learned in doing this that he didn't want to draw it that way ever again.
Yeah.
It's so impossible, man. Who would take that on if it was up to you what to draw?
Tell me, like, you haven't put yourself in positions where in the middle of drawing something, you knew it looks freaking cool, but it sucks to have to do the labor of it.
Yeah, for sure.
I like to see the way the bones there are fitting into the hand.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Great knuckles and tendons. That's a good one too, shadow. You know, you're getting the foreground arm.
Feels like a paperback cover.
Shadow. Yeah.
Feels like a paperback cover. Doesn't feel like your average comic book cover. And this is like cruising Al Pacino movie type outfit. They like Frank Miller, I think. You know, he had to go down to the bodega one night. Maybe he's a little hungry, and then he had to walk by some dudes coming out of clubs like this, and was like, "I'm going back to Vermont tomorrow." Interesting, paced up with the end right there, and if I remember, that was a color, that wasn't black. I always wonder how they do those color hold things.
Yeah, I can't remember. Pretty iconic, though.
Yeah, all this stuff. This was the first issue I picked up. You know, I got it for like something like 60 cents just because it was all jacked up.
Yeah, mine are not in mint condition, my Daredevils. A lot of white paint here.
Getting the arc, you know, after drawing enough Professor X's, I really respect people who can get that sweep of the top of a skull in one stroke, man, because it's very easy to get the head out of true, we'll say. All good covers. Like, it makes me think, it's like you put together these books that must have gotten done, you know, 10 minutes before deadline. And where do you even have time to think about these covers?
Yeah, it's true. Working that fast, I mean, I guess you just have all month, you know. Again, if you're the writer artist, at least you know the material.
Yeah.
Assuming that these are done in some kind of, I mean, who knows? Maybe the covers are done far in advance too, which would make them even more challenging.
Now, this cover, it's like color holds here, but this is color hold as well. You know, this is blue. And you see these multiple registration dots. So I think that this Zipitone might be on a separate sheet.
I bet you're right.
Because you could see that the registration dots are off. And the way it works, there's an acetate. They used to sell a roll of, it would look like Scotch tape, but it would have these registration mm-hmm. dots. You would put one dot on your actual board. You would put a dot on the overlay. And then when it went to the printer, it was their job to line these up as perfectly as possible so that the color wasn't askew.
That's why you need the artist editions.
Wow. Very dark background, blah, blah, blah. Dude, this is auteur Frank, man.
Yeah, man, notes on colors.
This was a good cover.
Yeah, it's wild. It's wild to see it in this form. And I guess the red is your indicator of...
Yeah, like where the windows, like, you know, where the colors break and stuff. And that's another puzzling piece to me. And if anybody knows the answer, like, put something in the comments. Because there would be this, like, remove red lines. Like one, of course. But two, how?
Yes. Yeah. This is such a beautiful cover. I always loved that cover.
Yeah, me too. Like all of these covers are so ingrained in my brain, and when we look at them at this level, they're great compositions.
Yeah, yeah, and they're very simple. A lot of them are very simple. You know, very simple. The previous, also very simple. The one with the Daredevil and the gun. You know, it reads like that's what you want. All of these, you know, like they're very simple concepts, and then just executed well.
I studied this one when I was little because if you would look at maybe it would be like some Stephen Platts or definitely a lot of Image stuff where there would be this kind of like, you know, confusion with weaponry and rain. Most people, they fuck it up because they tape down the paper and just have, like, one set of lines to sell you on the raindrops. But, like, all of these are, you know what I mean? They're not following the exact same path.
Yeah,
that's and I love that.
That's a harder thing to do and make work. You know, it seems like it's the simplest, easiest thing in the world, but it really isn't.
Especially, like, when you're thinking in terms of clarity in your drawing and trying to remove tangents and stuff, it's very easy to make what you need to be chaotic to composed. This seems pretty late period, huh?
Yeah, for sure. This would have been probably a cover to, like, an omnibus or some kind of collection. These are the Electra Saga covers.
Yeah.
Wraparound covers. I got hold of these pretty early on,
Me too.
They were available. I think these are expensive now.
That blows my mind, because the reason we got these was because we couldn't get Electra Daredevil 168 or whatever. That was too expensive, so you got these.
Right.
And these removed, once again, some of the subplot stuff. Like, do we care what Foggy had for lunch? You know, like, we need to know the real shit.
There's a cleanliness with the Wolverine stuff. And I think that was part of my disconnect with it.
Yeah, and that's Rubenstein, you know?
Came to it late, you know, and at the time it was like, I don't know, Buscema and Hairy Arms and Sinket, you know, like all these different things that were just much more textural. And seeing the very clean one, it wasn't quite the Wolverine that I loved.
Well, how about this, man? Is this the Spider-Man that you loved?
I am on board for this. How bizarre.
Because clean is definitely not the word.
No. That's a strange looking piece. Interesting choices too, to like do some line work in ink and then like do his facial features and some of the stuff with the duotone. Makes for a great artist edition piece.
Yeah, I'm trying to understand the logic of it, like, and just thinking, like, maybe it's the downplane, like, you know, the stuff that would be in shadow is black ink.
I think that's right. Underlit. He does that several times where a character's above the city and so they're underlit.
Yeah, but then he betrays that with this here. I guess there's not that much logic. You know, the guy had to get this thing done. This is a comic journal cover.
Yeah, this must have been, you know, like I always used to think you would cut out the Zipitone shapes and put down.
Yeah.
This is a full sheet and then you're removing things.
Yeah.
The full sheet's a tough thing to work with Zipitone. Easy to get air bubbles and... He makes it look easy.
Yeah. This is a bigger piece of Zip than I've ever seen. I couldn't find the scene, Jim.
So this was always this was like the advertisement whenever it was going to be Roger Stern and Frank Miller doing Doctor Strange, and it appears in a lot of comic books and just never happened for whatever reason. Do you know anything about... He must have addressed it in some interview or other, I'm sure, but I don't know why it didn't work.
We'll be going through some of the Frank Miller Comics Journal interviews as the channel keeps going, but I liked when Miller would get into his Ditko rhythm.
Right.
You know, this is fun stuff. And you know, we got a sample of that. We got a couple of those Spider-Man annuals, and Sienkiewicz would do a version of, like, the shine like this. And it, you know, it doesn't make... real world sense,
right?
But so what, it's a great design. No idea what this stuff would be for. Maybe spot illustrations.
Yeah, I was thinking like the Marvel Universe, those kind of things.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I don't know if that's what they are used at. Like, she seems positioned wrong for that.
Uh-huh.
But it could be. I don't know either.
Boom, a little Frank Miller bio in case you didn't know about the guy who you bought a $150 book about.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, still good to have it. These are always welcome. The blown up panels.
I don't know, Jim. I feel like I've taken a couple of tricks, man, to try to apply to my next monthly efforts in an attempt to get things in under the deadline.
I'll tell you, Ed, looking through this, I'm less confident of how to do a monthly book. There's a lot of work in here. I thought we were going to find tons of shortcuts, and I don't know, man. It all looked pretty good.
Anyhow, man, I'm juiced up. I'm ready to go. Excited to get back to making my own stuff. kayfabers, like, follow, subscribe to the YouTube channel, hit the bell. We'll notify you when the next videos are available. Octobriana's in stores right now, selling out quick, so get your hands on that ASAP. Follow the Patreon for updated Red Room strips. Every Tuesday, new ones go live at patreon.com/edpiskor.
Subscribe to the Cartoonist Kayfabe e-newsletter at the links below this video. You can find Cartoonist Kayfabe merchandise and t-shirts at the links below this video.
You smell that, Jim? I just cracked open my Duotone canisters.
Put on your masks, man.
Give them the marching orders, dude.
Read more comics.